The Supreme Court will hear a case in its upcoming term that experts say could radically change U.S. elections. Republican state lawmakers in North Carolina brought the case after a state court threw out their gerrymandered congressional maps. And the Republicans are pushing a controversial fringe legal theory to give state legislators much more power over elections. A one-time advisor to former President Trump has also pushed the idea. Now a group representing justices for all of the state's highest courts is speaking out against that legal argument. Rick Hassan is director of the UCLA Law School Safeguarding Democracy Project. He explained how, after losing their gerrymandering case, North Carolina Republicans are now pushing an idea called the independent state legislature theory.
The Republicans who are on the wrong end of that ruling have gone back to the United States Supreme Court, and they've said that there's a part of the Constitution, it's called the Elections Clause, and it says that each state in the manner the state legislature is direct can pick the rules for conducting congressional elections subject to Congress's override. They say that part of the Constitution means the state legislatures can act when they deal with federal elections unconnected to what the state constitution says and what the Supreme Court might say. The state legislatures are kind of this free-floating body that get to decide what the rules are going to be for federal elections, and they can't be reined in by state Supreme Courts or other state actors.
So to be clear, the theory says that state legislatures have nearly unchecked power to write election law and to manage elections?
Right. So to regulate elections, whatever that means. And that raises a really important point. It's not just state Supreme Courts that help to figure out the rules for federal elections. It's also state election administrators that have to administer the election laws that are passed by the state legislature.
Rick, put this in context for us. If the court sides with Republican state lawmakers that are pushing this theory, talk about the implications for American democracy.
Well, it has, I think, two implications. The first is that it shifts power away from the normal way that states conduct elections, where state Supreme Courts and election administrators play a role, as does the state governor, to the state legislatures. And in a state like North Carolina, where you have a Republican-dominated legislature and a Democratic-leaning state Supreme Court, you know, it's at least seen here as a kind of power grab. But the other thing that it does, and this is perhaps more significant in the long run, is that there's a parallel provision to this elections clause in Article 2 of the Constitution that applies to presidential elections. It's a so-called electors clause. Also says that the state legislature gets to set the manner for conducting presidential elections. And it was kind of a warped version of this theory that John Eastman and others relied upon when they urged state legislatures to come up with those alternative fake slates of electors to try to overturn the election. And I worry that even if the Supreme Court tries to rein it in, this is the kind of theory that could further empower state legislatures to try to do things to subvert election outcomes in the future.
Well, yes, some have called this as kind of a license to coup. If the Supreme Court sides with state lawmakers, this could lead to elections where states could ignore potentially the popular vote and give the electoral votes to the candidate of the party that controls the state house. Is that likely? Could that happen?
Well, you know, I don't think the Supreme Court would be giving the green light to that, but I do think that depending on how the court might write its opinion and how far it holds that state legislature have this power, that it could be relied upon in this way. But there's something you have to understand that's a basic background rule, which is that back in 2000, in the Bush versus Gore case, the case that ended the disputed election there, the Supreme Court said that state legislatures could directly take back their power to choose presidential electors. And that would mean that if a state decided that it was no longer going to let voters vote for a president directly, that the state legislature could come up with a mechanism to appoint those electors directly. So the flaw is not just with this independent state legislature theory. It's with part of the Constitution that contemplates the idea that we don't have a constitutional right to vote for president. It's only something that through legislation has been given to the people.
Rick, how far out of the legal mainstream is this theory, in your view?
Well, you know, there were lots of theories that were off the wall that are now on the wall at the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has become much more conservative and been willing to accept arguments that in the past seemed unlikely to be accepted. But what I can say is that back in that same 2000 case, Bush versus Gore, three justices, Justices Rehnquist, Scalia, and Thomas, advanced this theory. It wasn't accepted by a majority of the court, but it was put out there as an alternative basis for a ruling for Bush. And over the last couple of years, as similar cases have come up to the Supreme Court on an emergency basis, where the court usually doesn't give a definitive ruling, we have three justices that seem to have embraced the theory, Gorsuch, Alito, and Thomas. And Justice Kavanaugh has expressed some interest in the theory as well. So that makes potentially four justices. And so really the justices to be watching are going to be Chief Justice Roberts, and Amy Coney Barrett. Justice Barrett has not weighed in on this issue. It's really the conservatives on the court that are in the driver's seat. And it certainly is within the realm of possibility that a majority of the court will accept some version of this theory.
Rick, let's get to the criticism of the theory from the state Supreme Court justices who have weighed in here. They say this legal theory goes against the very idea of judicial review, that courts can review laws to determine if they're constitutional. Explain their argument.
Sure. It's very rare for these state Supreme Court justices to weigh in an amicus brief, a friend of the court brief. And these are justices coming from both liberal and conservative states. And they're saying, you know, when the Constitution uses the word legislature, it is understood in the context of how legislatures normally act. Normally, a legislature is bound not just by the United States Constitution, but also by state constitutions. Similarly, in the Elections Clause, it says that Congress can override state legislatures. It can't mean that Congress has the power to set rules for federal elections that are unconstrained by the U.S. Constitution. And these justices argue in the same way, state legislatures can't act in ways that are unconnected or going against the rules in either the U.S. Constitution or the state constitution.
Rick, in your view, would this be potentially devastating for voting rights and the administration of elections around the country?
Well, I think it could serve to cause a lot of chaos and uncertainty as to what the rules are, and that could be devastating. It also would hurt voting rights in the sense that the federal courts have been less and less protective, whether it's under the Voting Rights Act or under the Constitution, of the rights of people. And yet, many state constitutions have provisions protecting the right to vote. And it was one of kind of the last bastions that people could go to. The people who were upset with partisan gerrymandering in North Carolina when they couldn't get a relief in a federal court to turn to state courts, that powerful arena would be gone in a large percentage of these cases.
Rick Hassin is director of the UCLA Law School Safeguarding Democracy Project. Professor, thanks for joining us.
It was great to be with you.